My name is Katarina Buchatsky. I'm the co-founder and co-executive of the Shadows Project, which is a cultural heritage organization in Ukraine run by young Ukrainians with the mission to reclaim Ukraine's historical and cultural narrative and reimagine it, modernize it to fit our generation.
I love it when someone gives a phenomenal pitch. I am like, it literally does my heart warm in every single way, which of course cracks me up. So let's just start right from the beginning. Why is your pitch so perfect? Like, how did you get to the point where you could develop a pitch so well?
I have been working on Shadows for about over a year now. And throughout the course of the year, we've been connected to so many people. We've done so many things that has really required me to hone my pitch very quickly because our project, we struggled with this at the beginning because our project is rather abstract. And a lot of the time we tried to explain it to people, they weren't really getting it at first. And so after a lot of practice, we tried to sum it up in those two sentences. It's still rather abstract, but hopefully that opens the door to some interest. And then we kind of take it from there, but it comes with a lot of practice.
I have to say that I'm so impressed when people, because like right off the bat, you just gave a golden nugget of lessons to whoever's listening to you. Practice, 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 and go out there and do it and say it. I think that too many people wait for it to be perfect and they won't say it. It stays in their head. And then when it comes out, it becomes like, it's extremely jumbled. And I always say, like, if you don't say it and if you don't get the feedback, you're never going to know what to change and what to add, or when people are confused by your words. And so this is why where I'm like, I get so happy when someone says it really, really, like, it's just like, it flowed out of your mouth so well that I'm like, oh, this is going to be a great conversation already. It's going to be great. Before we talk, I mean, obviously there's going to be, I mean, it's going to be a compact hour of just lots of questions, but I want to start so people understand who you are first. So currently, where are you, but where are you from? Tell me about your family. You're in school right now. I know that you're in school. So let's talk about everything up to the time that you started your company so people can understand who you are.
Okay. Well, I'm currently in Krakow, Poland, and it's my first time here. And I'm here under extraordinary circumstances, but before getting to Krakow,
from the, where, like literally like younger, right? So we know where you are right now, but we're from younger on, and then we're going to dive in.
Okay. I'm the daughter of Ukrainian and Brazilian parents. So my mother's from Brazil and my dad is from Ukraine. I spent some of my childhood in Brazil before moving to Kyiv, Ukraine, when I was 6 years old. And I spent a majority of my childhood years in Kyiv, Ukraine. And I moved out of Kyiv when I was 13 years old in 2014, right after the Maidan revolution in Ukraine. And from there, I moved to a suburb near Boston, did high school in Boston, and have been attending college at Stanford since then. And essentially, most of my kind of developing crucial years were spent in Ukraine, where I developed a very intimate connection to my Ukrainian side. And even though I'm only half Ukrainian from my dad's side, my dad's from Odessa, even my mom, my Brazilian mom, when she was living in Ukraine, fell in love with Ukraine. And she kind of calls herself, she introduces herself as Ukrainian. And I'm like, mom, you're not. But she says, well, I'm married to a Ukrainian, my kids are Ukrainian, and I live there, so I'm Ukrainian. I'm like, I'm not sure that's how it works. But just to give you an idea that, you know, I've always considered myself, you know, coming from a Ukrainian family, even because my Brazilian mother has always been such a big Ukrainian patriot that it's been a part of my upbringing. And when I moved to Boston, at first, there was kind of a hectic transition into life in America, and I wasn't really sure what I was doing, what was going on. And I didn't really realize how much I missed being in Ukraine, and I missed my Ukrainian side and how connected I felt to Ukrainian culture until I felt that that was taken away from me because I moved to the US. And so when I went into college, I think after very turbulent high school years in the US, I finally settled in a little bit in college and had a moment where I thought, okay, I'm a bit more settled in my life. It's now the time to start searching for what I really believe in, what I care about, and who I am really. And when I started kind of asking myself those questions, I always came back to Ukraine. And I thought, you know, I hadn't really gotten the chance to reflect on my experiences in Ukraine and who I am as a Ukrainian, because the move was so sudden. I didn't know that we were moving to the US until quite literally we were moving, because it was happened as a reaction to the revolution of 2014. It was not in our plans. And so I hadn't really gotten a chance to reflect before. And I started going back to visit Ukraine quite frequently. I spent spring break there. I went back for the summer. And the more time that I spent coming back to Ukraine, the more time I realized that, wow, I really do feel as though, you know, all of this was taken away from me. And I really do feel as though that is where my roots still are. And I started asking myself these questions of, what does Ukrainian history mean to me? How has it shaped my life? And as soon as I started trying to explore, I actually realized that a lot of Ukrainian history and Ukrainian culture really had shaped parts of my personality and parts of my identity in ways that I didn't even realize. And so I started investigating, and I reached out to a few friends that became my
co-founder. I'm going to give you a pause. Well-spoken young woman. I love it. Well-spoken. I'm going to pause you for a couple of things. Number one, this is very minute. The sun is so on your face that it's like, it's literally erasing you as you're talking. So I just want you to move a little bit away from the sun so we're just focusing on you. Because it tends to be a little bit distracting for not only me, but I'm sure for anyone that's going to be listening to you and watching. Okay. That's number one. Number two, rewind a little bit. So are you trilingual, bilingual? Like, how many languages do you speak?
I speak five.
Well, of course you do. So what languages do you, I love it. I'm trilingual, sort of, kind of. French, English, my Haitian Creole is deplorable, but I understand it very clearly. And I could, if I had to in a dire moment, I could speak Haitian Creole, but it's just really, really choppy and really bad. But my French and my English are on point. So what are the languages that you speak?
I speak Portuguese from my mother's Brazilian side. I speak Russian and Ukrainian. And I speak English and French.
Beautiful. I love it. And this was like not from school, like being an experience in situations where you were in countries where you had to speak the language. Because, you know, obviously school and being in the environment is like fully dramatically different.
Yes. I learned it. I'm a native speaker. We spoke all of these languages at home, and I did go to French school for just a year. So I picked that up there.
Okay. You have zero accent. I have zero accent. I did theater school. So my family, everyone has accents. My sister has an accent. She's older. She was born in Haiti. I was born in America, conceived in Haiti, born in America, because my mom was 8.5 months pregnant with me. So I always say that. I'm like, I want you to know that I ate mangoes. Like, my mom ate mangoes and coconuts. I am conceived, like, fingers, toes, everything Haiti. But I took theater classes, so I have no accent unless I'm speaking in French. You have no accent neither. So what happened to it?
I do have an accent when I'm speaking some of my other languages, but I've been going to school in America for a very long time. So my English is great, but unfortunately, some of my other languages, I do have an American accent in as of now. But it's actually funny because I always say that I do wish that I had an accent speaking English, because I think that I assimilate too well and I don't like that. And so I wish that there was some kind of marker that would tell people that I'm not American.
I know it's when I go and visit different islands, people can tell I'm an islander. And I'm like, it's the biggest compliment knowing that whenever I go to an island, people can tell, like, you're not African-American. You're not American. Like, what are you? I'm like, you know, like, so it is a really, really wonderful feeling. And I know it's weird for other people, but when you are from a different country, it's a pride. It's a little bit of a pride, which is really nice. Do you have siblings?
I have a little brother. He's a senior in high school. He's graduating.
Did he understand and did he experience what you experienced when you were leaving Ukraine the first time?
I don't think he did. I haven't spoken with him too much about this because I think our connections to Ukraine are very different. But he must have been 8 years old when we moved out of Ukraine. So most of his life has been in America. He did middle school, high school, is going to go to college in the US. And so I think that he feels a bit more comfortable there and more assimilated, and he had an easier transition. Also, one of his childhood best friends from Ukraine ended up moving to the town right next to us. So he even brought some of his friends with him, which was helpful, I'm sure. But I think it's been really nice to see him. He's worked with us at Shadows a bit, and it's been nice to see him getting in touch with that side of his heritage. And he spent the summer in Ukraine with me last summer, getting a feel for what it's like. And so I really appreciate that, because I don't want him to lose that.
Wait, it was just the two of you guys that went? How nice is that? Like, I mean, that's beautiful.
I was there by myself for the whole summer in Kyiv. He went by himself and spent the summer in Odessa, which is my dad's hometown. Mm-hmm. And then he visited me in Kyiv. I visited him in Odessa, and our parents throughout the summer occasionally popped by and said hello, but we were there by ourselves, and it was a great, great summer.
Oh my God, that is like so fantastic. And that was last year.
Yeah, 2021. Yeah.
Okay. So where were you? I mean, you started this company in 2019, this project in 2019, correct?
I started it in January of 2021.
Oh, 2021. Okay. So you started in 2021. Yeah. Like the pandemic, there's buzz around Europe that is a possibility that Russia is going to invade. Where are you when you're starting to hear the buzz?
Yeah. So the first time that we start to hear this buzz about a Russian invasion of Ukraine was April of 2021. Mm-hmm. It was the time that Russia sent 100,000 troops to the border with Ukraine for training. And there were a few headlines of why are there so many troops on the Ukrainian border, but they withdrew them after a few weeks and it kind of went quiet. Now we know that that was preparation, but I remember very distinctly, actually, I was in Lexington, which is right outside of Boston. And I was working on Shadows at the time. And I remember seeing the headlines of there's troop buildup around Ukraine. And I remember I was sitting in my bed. I can just like picture how my room, the way it was. And I'm reading this. And I remember I reposted it on my Instagram. Mm-hmm. And I said something like, I don't know what's going on. There's troop buildup. Can everyone please pay attention to this? And I posted that asking my followers to please kind of be aware that something's going to happen, pay attention. That was in April. And then the buzz died down for a bit until this winter. And so I just remember at that time in April, and it's so funny to think about it now, because I felt so helpless at the time when I was posting that. I was thinking, can someone please just pay attention? Like, this might happen. And a few people swiped up and they were like, wow, that's so weird. That's crazy. And then we kind of all moved on. And then 6 months, however many months later, you know, it happens. And luckily now people are paying attention, but it's one of those things where I wish people had paid attention sooner. And even, you know, not even just like from a few months ago, but even from 2014, I wish people had been paying attention, because obviously they annexed Crimea in 2014. And that was another point where we were kind of shouting into the void. And you know.
The project, did it start simultaneously? I mean, did it start because you saw, there was like a gap where you wanted to sit there and fill this gap, or did it stem from you realize something may be happening and you want to get more people involved? So how did you begin the entire conversation, and who else is in this group with you that designed this business model?
Well, it actually, so this project started before any kind of news of a reinvasion of Ukraine. And what happened was as I talked a little bit about, I was kind of in this phase where I was rediscovering a lot of Ukraine and its history and its culture, a lot of it that I hadn't known about before, primarily because Ukraine had been under occupation for so much of its history that a lot of its unique culture and history has actually just been repressed and lost and burned. And so it's quite hard to access a lot of these things. And I had spent September of 2020, I spent it in Kyiv, Ukraine, Just kind of hanging around, not doing much. It was pandemic era and I wasn't at school. So I figured I'd just go and hang out. And during that time in September of 2020, I was reading a lot and researching a lot about Ukraine's past and its hidden history and kind of repressed cultural figures. And I realized that there are so many things that have impacted me and my life and my personality that I didn't even know existed in a way, because they existed underground and I didn't even realize the influence that they had been having on me. And it was kind of this opening up of a floodgate, because I wanted to continue researching and just finding out everything that I could. And so that's kind of where the initial kernel for Shadows Project began. And so I contacted two of my friends. I had no idea what I was going to do. I had no idea what this was going to be. I just had an inkling of something. So I contacted two of my friends that I didn't really know before, actually. We were just kind of Instagram friends, but I DM'd them and I said, I know you guys have posted a bit about Ukrainian culture. I'm trying to learn more about it. I have a few ideas. Can we get on a call? So they said, sure. We got on a call and I said, guys, I've been having this weird awakening of my identity, of, you know, awakening of Ukraine and Ukrainian cultural history and all of these things. And I've been learning more about it. And there's so much about it that is lost and has been erased and rewritten. And I really think that people need to hear it, because young Ukrainians need to feel this connection to their country. And I told them this and they said, oh my gosh, we feel the same thing. And they said, we totally get that feeling that we need to be more connected and that there is so much of our ties to Ukraine that have been repressed so far. And the fact, hearing them say that they felt the same way, that they felt the same reawakening of their Ukrainian identity that was kind of starting to occur, was really validating, because I realized that it wasn't just me. Because as I was going through this process, I had a lot of kind of internalized guilt that, you know, maybe everyone else is already really connected to Ukraine and it's just me that, you know, didn't get the same experience. Maybe this is just me. But it was really a lot less lonely realizing that actually a lot of young Ukrainians didn't grow up with this concrete, tangible idea of what Ukraine meant to them because of our history of being occupied and colonized. And so hearing them go through the same thing was very validating. So we all came together and realized there's so many more of us out there that feel this way. We should do something that gives Ukrainian culture a platform and allows the youth to have a say in rebuilding their narrative and making the culture relevant to us today. Because a lot of the traditions that we grew up with, I mean, these are traditions that have been around since centuries ago. They don't have a relevance to our young Ukrainian life today, and yet they're still a very big part of us. So we thought, okay, how can we make our culture that's so historically rich relevant so we can create a continuity and we can really kind of create the next generation of what it means to be Ukrainian and an understanding of our culture. So we all came together and we came up with, it was my dad who came up with the name Shadows Project, because it's named after a very famous piece of literature of Ukrainian history called Shadows of Forgotten Ancestors. And I really liked that because I thought that it was perfect. Like, that's exactly what we were trying to do. We have all of these forgotten ancestors that have shaped our history and our culture that have been lost in history. And now we're trying to bring their shadows out and, you know, make all of this a part of our lives today. And so Shadows of Forgotten Ancestors was a great name. Of course, that name was already taken because that's the name of the book. So we went with the Shadows Project as an inspiration. And that's kind of how it started. It really started without any concrete idea, but just with a feeling. And as we worked on it more and met more and more people, it started really just as a research group almost. We were just researching these things and trying to put them out. And then it developed into something that we realized we could actually make tangible, actionable items. We could actually kind of create a direct change. So we started doing a lot more concrete things, but it started as just a group of young Ukrainians that wanted to learn more about themselves and wanted to do some research. So
how many people there are, I mean, one, I think it's phenomenal. I mean, because in order for any culture to stay relevant, there has to be the younger generation that's curious about it. And if they're not curious about it, it just, it really does die. So traditions, things, I mean, people think, you hear what your parents say, your grandparents, and you're like, oh yeah, that's sweet. Things, traditions that we did, whatever. Yeah. But then there's a certain point of your life where you're like, oh, I want to start learning how to cook the food. Yeah. I want to learn how to, we'll call it the religion, the celebrations, everything about who I am is what I want to do. And I always say, like, for me, since I was younger, I mean, it's being Haitian is like, it's huge. I mean, like, it's like, outside of the house, I was in America, inside the house, you are in Haiti, 100%, the music, the food, everything, language. And when AIDS first came out, I remember that Haitians were being attacked and assuming that Haitians were bringing AIDS into the United States, and people were getting attacked. As you see, every single time there's a major thing that hits America, the xenophobia is out of control because people don't take the time to learn about a culture or learn about the people. So they automatically go for the fight versus the flight, or the fight and flight versus the learning and caring situation. With you and the group of young people, I mean, you're researching and you're engaging in a way with one another, but where does it go from here? What's going on right now in Ukraine? Look, what was the essence of, we're learning, we're going to bring more people in.
Yeah.
How are you recruiting people in to understand? Like, I go, are you ready to learn about your culture? What are your plans? What were your plans? And what are your plans? And how are people perceiving you? Like, as in the older generation of Ukrainians, how are they perceiving this group? Are they thinking of like, oh, a bunch of kids, or are they really excited about what you're offering?
Yeah, I think that it actually grew very organically. I think that there were a lot of people that had an interest in this already, and it was very easy to recruit people. It was very much by word of mouth. A friend would talk to a friend and say, I'm doing this project, and they would say, I'm interested, or they'd say, I have a friend that's interested. And so we kind of got a group of people working on this together pretty quickly. And then we figured, okay, we have all these ideas for things that we want to put out, research we want to produce, and we need a platform for it. So at first, we were going to create a website and have it be kind of an online cultural archive by young Ukrainians. Mm-hmm. And then we thought, okay, well, if our whole idea is that this is for young Ukrainians, a website is not the most relevant platform for them. So we went to Instagram naturally, because we figured, what is the best way to make this accessible for our generation of Ukrainians? So we created an Instagram account. We now have almost 6,000 followers, and we created an Instagram account and started putting out these little posts of things that our team had researched. So some of our early posts included posts about Ukrainian artists that people didn't know were Ukrainian because they had been relabeled as Russian. So we did some posts about artists and their art. We did a few posts about some events in Ukrainian history that not a lot of people know about. We did a few cool posts about the origins of, you know, modern Ukrainian things. So we did one about the origins of Ukrainian currency. So the money that you use every day, you know, why does it look like that? And things that make our history relevant to us today. Mm-hmm. So we started doing that on Instagram, and we got a lot of really good responses. People thought it was cool. People were excited to learn more about their history. And a lot of the youth were very excited to not only be able to learn more about their history, but share more about it. So one of the things we did, all of our posts are also available in English, which was really, really helpful, because a lot of these young Ukrainians, one of the big things for them was, they knew how cool their country was, but other people didn't outside of Ukraine. And so for us to make our posts accessible in English, they were able to share their posts with their foreign friends and say, oh my gosh, look at how cool my country is. Like, look at this really cool anecdote from history. And so we actually got a lot of foreigners on our page right from the beginning that were friends of Ukrainians, Ukrainian diaspora from around the world, that were excited to learn more about Ukraine. And so we got a pretty big platform of foreigners as well, which is very exciting, because I think that one of the most important things for a country and a state to continue existing is for it to exist in other people's minds, because it can exist in your mind, but if no one else thinks it exists, then it's not going to exist. You know, as much as we can say Crimea is a part of Ukraine, if Crimea doesn't exist as part of Ukraine across the world, Crimea is not going to be a part of Ukraine. And so those kind of things were important for us to make sure that other people were thinking about Ukraine and learning about its sovereignty and its cultural history. And so that's the way it started. And then as we grew, And we realized our potential because we were talking to a lot of people, a lot of adults as well. And people were very, very excited about the idea because a lot of adults had been trying to make young people interested in history for a very long time. And they weren't being very successful because they didn't know what was relevant to us and what we cared about. And so we started talking to a lot of adults, history teachers, professors, university professors, and people that work in the cultural community. And they were excited because they were saying, we've been trying to get through to you guys for so long. We're so happy that now you're giving us a platform. So one of the very first things we did, one of our very first like concrete, tangible projects was we managed to collaborate with the Museum of History in Kyiv, which was very exciting because as a young account without much to show for ourselves, you know, they didn't necessarily need to take us seriously. But we managed to get a hold of the director of the Museum of History in Kyiv and explained that we have a group of young people, we have a platform, we have an Instagram account full of young people that want to learn about Ukrainian history. And they said, well, that's exactly what we need. We need an audience. So we managed to collaborate with them and kind of put together a few select posts about really cool anecdotes of Ukrainian history that you can actually supplement with artifacts in the Museum of History of Kyiv. So we said, you know, here's a really cool, interesting story about Kyiv's history. You can actually see this artifact in the museum and to incentivize young people to actually go and check it out and realize that there are interesting things in our museums. And so that was one of the first things we did. And that went really well. So now we have kind of a longstanding partnership with the Museum of History of Kyiv. And we really hope to be able to continue to do that after the war ends. And so we have a lot of these contacts of other museums that are really excited to work with us and things of the sort, cultural organizations. And so we have a platform of young Ukrainians. We just need to mobilize them to go to the right places, to go learn about their history. And there's so many places in Ukraine that you can already do that. They just haven't been able to reach our generation yet.
I'm just always curious where, when you are dealing with the museums and something like, I mean, a war is happening, yeah. What happens to the history? Like, where does it go? Who protects it? Who hides it? Like, you, I mean, you have now created this relationship with the museum heads. Have you checked on them to see what's going on for them?
Yeah, so that's actually the project we're currently working on. Obviously, with the start of the war, we had to pivot our priorities and pivot what we're all about because now everything is mobilized towards the war effort. And a few weeks ago, shortly after the war started, we sat down with Shadows and we talked about, you know, what is our role in this conflict? Mm-hmm. Because an Instagram account about history is not relevant right now. Like we need to have a role in the conflict. And we figured the most natural thing for us to do was to help evacuate and preserve the art and the artifacts in our museums. Because since our project is all about, you know, preserving our history and making it and bringing it with us into our life today, it's so important that we manage to protect it. So right away, we started contacting these museums and asking them what they need in order to preserve their artifacts and preserve the art. And we've actually been at for a few weeks now, and we've been really successful at providing them the supplies they need. So this weekend, actually in just a few days, I'm going to Lviv, which is a town in Western Ukraine, and I'm going into Ukraine with the first shipment of equipment for the Natural History Museum. So we've managed to raise a lot of money to provide fireproof cabinets, generators, a lot of fireproof blankets and general protective supplies for the art. And it'll be really exciting. So I'm going to go on Saturday with the first batch of equipment to provide to the museum. And we'll hope to continue doing that for the other museums across Ukraine.
How old are you?
21.
You're 21. Your parents, and full disclosure, I know your dad. I mean, I know that this is how this happened because I know your dad, and your dad and I went to Morocco together. And like, I mean, we are diehard believers of the most kick-ass entrepreneurs of the world. And we travel around the world and we talk about it. And your dad is the most amazing advocate for entrepreneurs and changing this world and saving this planet. And as you're talking, I'm like, oh, I so get this. I so get this now. I love it. But you're 21 years old. You are his daughter, his oldest, pride and joy. You are cut from the cloth of both clearly your parents. And we're definitely going to go back to talk about your mom and your Brazilian part. But How are your parents feeling about you being in Poland right now, knowing that you're going to cross over to Ukraine? And again, just because the war is in one section, not realizing it could end up in other sections of Ukraine as well. So, I mean, how are you having the conversations with them? How are they dealing with all of this? Because you're their oldest and you are like, I'm going to fight. I want to make change. What was that conversation like when you were home and now you're there? How are they doing?
Yeah. My relationship with my parents in regards to this has been complex because obviously it's a very, I mean, how are you supposed to have these conversations? Like it's, you know, no one knows what to do. However stubborn they may be, I'm more stubborn because I came from them. And so I think that they've gotten used to.
Wait, yeah. I just want you to repeat that because you froze.
Okay. So I think my parents throughout the years have realized that I, you know, however stubborn they may be, I'm definitely more stubborn because I come from both of them. And so it's combined. And I think that they've learned to trust me. And so they've learned to trust me, but they've also learned that I'm very, very staunch about what I believe in. And for me, if there's something that I really care about, that I really feel as though I need to do, I'm going to find a way to do it. And so the very first thing that happened the night that the war began, I called my mom in tears because the war had started and I told her, well, I'm going to go somewhere. I don't know where, but I'm going to go. My mom said, okay, well, let's not make any rash decisions. Let's try and think about this, make a plan. You know, I don't think you should go. And I said, well, that's not what I want to hear right now.
Where were you when the war started? And how far were you from where the war was starting?
Well, I was at Stanford. Okay. So I was in San Francisco. And so my mom at first was not, she wasn't a fan of the idea of me leaving. She said, it doesn't make sense for you to pack up and leave your entire life, your studies behind. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. That's not what I wanted to hear at the moment. So we kind of hung up on that note. And a few days later, I called her back and I said, I made a plan. I'm meeting my friends in Poland. I'm doing this. I'm going to get my flight ticket in a few days, just so you know. She said, well, okay. And, you know, she kind of realized that there's no way that I was not going to find a way to do this. And it was the same thing with going into Ukraine. So since I've been here, they've been very, very supportive. They're also very busy working on the war efforts on their own. So they don't have really much time to be worrying about micromanaging. And so I check
in. I love how you think that, but a parent is a parent is a parent. So I love how you think that they're like, they don't have time to micromanage. They're like biting their tongue and they're watching every move you make without you. So that's adorable that you think that, but I just want you to know that they are freaking out, internally freaking out and freaking out to each other and probably having little moments of conversations where like, it's not working because you have a Ukrainian personality and a Brazilian personality and it's like a, and their daughter is in Poland. They're like, oh yeah, I love how you would, that's adorable.
Well, I mean, I call them every few days and kind of check in and they ask me what I'm up to and they help me with anything I need. And they've been really good. And actually, so yesterday I kind of broke it to my mom that I'll be going to Ukraine over the weekend. And she said, we were on a call and this is exactly how it went. She said, well, what are your plans for the rest of the week? And I said, well, I'm doing XYZ, I'm doing this. And then on the weekend, I'm going in with a team of volunteers, we're going to go to Lviv and drop off the supplies. And so we're both just kind of silent for a minute and I'm waiting to see. And then she says, you know, I was on the phone with someone in Lviv because Lviv had gotten lightly bombed over this past week. And she said, I was on the phone with someone from Lviv this morning who got their arm blown off by a bomb. And I said, well, I was on the phone with someone from Lviv this morning that didn't. So, you know, and
well,
she was
this
just
is
kind
gonna,
of,
this is, I can't even, I mean, like one, I mean, it's devastating. I mean, so let's just go there where it is absolutely devastating. I mean, from a person that's speaking, like where my family's from Haiti, hating on a good day is in a bad situation on a good day. And so you, whether it's the president being assassinated, whether it is like the weather, floods, earthquakes. I mean, Haiti is on a good day having situations that we are trying to figure out how to sit there and still survive. Yeah. And so when I remember when I went to Haiti, right after, so Duvalier was booted out. Alistide came in, but it was very dangerous with President Alistide. And I remember going with a delegation. So my cousin worked for the government. I went with a delegation. That was the only way that my parents would ever let me go back to Haiti at that time. And it was in 2008. And literally my parents were like, they called everyone. They made phone calls. They're like, make sure our daughter comes back. Like, I mean, our daughter cannot die in the homeland. And so, and I've gone to Haiti since then, but every single time I go, it is a full on, everyone knows I'm there. I'm like, I don't think it's a good idea that everyone knows I'm there. So let's stop doing that. But I get that. I understand that where in your homeland, you don't want your children or your family member, you don't want anyone to get hurt in the homeland. So with you being there and every day we're seeing what's in the news, my heart is going out because again, being from a country where situations like this happen all the time and being in a country where people are brown and people are just like, it's like the love and care isn't as wholeheartedly as it is for Ukraine. Mind you, we're not in war in Haiti. We have so many other things, but how have you, I mean, you're at home, you're seeing it, you want to help, but everything that's going on here, how are you, your friends, your family, how are you guys handling it? Because you're seeing it in the most rawest form ever. How are you handling this? Yes, you want to help, but emotionally, how are you able to handle all of this?
Well, I'm not, is the short answer. I don't know how to even begin because it's been such a roller coaster. Also, I don't know if you can hear, but actually right outside in the central square, they're singing the Ukrainian anthem.
I don't hear it. Oh, I wish I could hear it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they have like every day at around this time, the Ukrainian refugees in Krakow come together so I can hear them singing the anthem. Yeah. I mean, I don't even know kind of where to begin with this because it's such, I was telling this to my mom actually last night and I said, I've never felt this unregulated in my emotions. I mean, really, I feel as though I have absolutely no control over what's happening inside, not just externally into my country, but I really feel as though I have no control over my mental state, my emotions. Like it very much is a roller coaster where wherever kind of the day's emotions are going to take me, I'll have to go. And I have no control over whether one minute I'm going to feel immense guilt, regret, happiness, pride, devastation. It's just kind of like, I literally feel as though I'm not operating my own body in a way. Like I'm just kind of like, the only thing that I control are kind of like my eyes. Like I look around and I can see what happens and I can like move myself around like a little puppet, but like what's actually happening in here, like I have no control because every hour, like minute by minute, I can be feeling a new emotion. And it's extremely, extremely disorienting because I really don't know what to feel. Like at any given moment, if I have a moment to sit and reflect and I'm sitting there and I try and think, okay, can I focus on one emotion that I feel so that I can feel that? And the answer is always no, you have to feel like 17 different emotions. And I try to journal, I try to write down, okay, today I'm feeling a bit happier because, you know, I saw this thing happen that was a good thing and I feel pride in my country and I'm trying to write this down and I'm like, okay, right now I feel pride for my country. And then even as I'm writing that, I start to feel these layers of, okay, yeah, but you might feel pride, but you're not really doing as much as you can. So can you really be proud? Like, are you making your country proud? And so it's just so many layers at once that it really, I've never felt this like unregulated. Like I feel as though I'm like, you know, factory settings have been like scrambled. Like, I don't know what's happening.
So besides the journaling, I mean, you're there and you're go, 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 go. And I'll give you the example, like 9/11 happened. And I remember going there and it was go, 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 go constantly. Like I was working the media, like literally just go, go, go. And then once I took a moment to pause, it all came in and I just couldn't even, when you say you can't regulate yourself, I just was like, I lost it. I lost it entirely. So how are you able to, I mean, you seriously have to take care of yourself. How are you taking care of yourself to be able to take care of other people?
Well, you know, I'm not really, I'm not at a place where I'm necessarily not taking care of myself. I mean, I get up in the morning, I get dressed, I can take my showers, I can journal, I can go eat lunch. So my basic needs are being met, and I'm, you know, I have myself together. I'm pretty put together. I think that it's just, there are moments where I hit a stall where there are so many things happening internally that I find it hard to kind of move past that block. And then it's like almost contradictory, because since I can't move past that block to kind of get to work, that adds that other layer of like, why are you just sitting here staring at the wall? Like, that makes it worse. And so it's like trying to move past that. But I think on a day-to-day, because a lot of my work revolves around like actually taking meetings and having to talk to people, that forces me to get up and go. On the days where I don't have anyone to talk to, even like in a meeting, those are the harder days, because those are the days where it can be hard to kind of get up and force myself to do something a bit more abstract. But on a day to day, I'm like, okay, I'm going to talk to this person, I'm going to call this person to get this equipment. And so I kind of keep myself going like that.
Yeah. What's happening with school for you now? Since, I mean, school is still in session. So what's happening? You're not in America right now.
Yeah, I'm taking a leave of absence for the next quarter.
Okay. All right. What happens next? I'm literally just thinking about all the, my cousins, my friends, kids. I mean, I'm just thinking about everyone that's in your age. I'm like, okay, I would be freaking out. But what happens for you now? Like, what's next on the plate? Because I feel like I'm going to have conversations with you like every 2 weeks. I just want to know, every 2 weeks I'm calling you and we're going to have this conversation and we're going to post, because what happens now for you? Like, I mean, what is the plan? I mean, so what's your today? Like, because this is for me where I can't even discuss what's happening in the next year for you. So what's the week look like for you?
Yeah. So this week I'm trying to get a bunch of loose ends tied up, because we have a lot of people interested, a lot of donors interested in supplying us with the rest of the museum equipment. So for the rest of the day, I'm going to try and like reach out to everyone that's shown an interest, give them the necessary information, try and see if I can get a few more donations of equipment, and then write up a few proposals to send to more people, just kind of like tying up those loose ends. And then I'm probably going to go pick up the first batch of equipment that's landing in Krakow in a few, or it should have already landed. So I'll go pick that up, bring it home with me, get it ready to ship out over the weekend. And then we have a bunch of plans for Shadows Project that I need to talk to my co-founders and my co-executives about. So probably later today in the evening, figure out our next steps, because we're trying to set up a website to streamline donations easier. So we'll try and set up a website, things like that. It's very, very scattered. It's just trying to put a bunch of dots together and make sure that everyone is doing what they need to be doing. Because a lot of the time, like I can't do things myself, because I need the money for it and I need people to pick it up and things like that. So it's mostly like calling everybody that I need to be involved and making sure that they're ready to, you know, do their part when it's their time. So
do you have a car? Do you have a trucking company? Like, how are you getting, when things are landing, they're landing at the airport, or, I mean, are they coming in airport, train? How are you picking up? Like, how is this working?
Yeah. So far the things that have landed are actually not very big. So I've managed to ship them to my place here. And so they're going to be physically here. And I think I'm going to be able to take them with me on the train by myself. It's like a few boxes. So I'll just, you know, put them on the train and someone will meet me at the train station and carry them out. The rest of the equipment that's a bit more heavy duty. So that's one of the things I'm working on. I have the contacts of some guys that own a warehouse. So I'm trying to see if I can take up their warehouse space. And then I also have contacts of guys that own a trucking company. So I'm trying to see if they will be able to pick things up from Krakow. And I don't know if the guys are going to want to volunteer to take it into Ukraine. So I'm trying to see how far they'll take it to the border. And then on the border, see if someone else can take it into Ukraine. Luckily, there's no shortage of volunteers. Like, there's millions of people mobilized on this. And so I have no doubt that I'll be able to find someone. It's just like a lot of different moving pieces.
Is the artwork going to stay in Ukraine, or is it just going to come to Poland in the shipping containers just for holding? So what are your thoughts, and what has the discussion been in regards of what will happen to, once it's packaged and protected, where will it be stored?
Yeah, so it very much depends on the museum. Most museums are keeping it in the country. There's a few that have very, very important pieces of art that are actually in the process of working out an evacuation.
I just love the fact that you have made it a goal of yours to, like, literally when you first started this, like, this is all about our culture and making sure that the young generation doesn't forget and is aware and, like, learning. Like, if you want to know and take pride of who you are, you have to know where you were right from the beginning. So I love it that you're doing this. But this is such an amazing time to be prideful of who you are and what's going on. And it's not just like when something like a blip of a moment and everyone wears a flag or something like that. I go, and when we talked about how, like, my headband, where I live in Boston and the Boston Marathon color. So I have so many Ukrainian colors by default because I'm a marathon runner. And so I'm so proud. I mean, I'm so proud of you. I'm so, so, so proud of you. I tell people all the time, I am a pro advocate of elderly and I'm a pro advocate of young people. Everyone in between, figure it out. You guys figure it out. But all I know is, like, those are the two that I always will advocate for. I love, I adore. I just, because it's the keeper of history and literally the keepers of change that come together for me. And I always want to be on both ends, because everyone in the middle tends to be afraid, confused, conflict. I mean, everyone in the middle of age, it's just like, there's just so much that I'm like, this is why young and the old, I love you, the young and the old. I'm going to go back to your mom for a quick second.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you do that's Brazilian besides speak Portuguese? I mean, and mind you, your mom taking you up, don't sit there and poo-poo on your mom, because literally she has Ukrainian children. She married a Ukrainian man. I go, and she lived in Ukraine. So don't poo-poo her. I'm like, but how is the Brazilian culture in your home at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, well, I go to Brazil every Christmas. My boy. So I have very and family.
But your feed is freezing again.
Oh. Hello.
Hi, hello there. All right. So I asked the question, I go, in regards of it, is the Brazilian culture in your home?
Yeah. Yeah. I go to Brazil every Christmas. So I spend Christmas with my Brazilian family there every year. And I'm very, very close with them. Obviously, I equally love Brazilian culture. I think it's gorgeous. We speak Portuguese at home. We cheer hard during the World Cup. And we eat Brazilian food all the time, even too much, because sometimes there are complaints of the same rice and beans every day. I love being Brazilian, and I love every aspect of Brazilian culture. I just think something that I talk about when people ask me, well, why are you more openly, outwardly Ukrainian than you are Brazilian? And I say, well, it's because I have to be. It's because if I don't express my Brazilian culture and identity, it's not going anywhere. Brazil is going to be Brazil. Brazilians are going to be Brazilian. And I don't feel the need to advocate for it necessarily, because everyone knows what Brazil is. Everyone's confident in what Brazil is. And yet, if I don't outwardly constantly express and affirm my Ukrainian identity, it could quite literally, as we're seeing, disappear in, you know, overnight. And so that's why I'm more expressive of my Ukrainian side, though my Brazilian side is something I feel a lot more secure in, because it's going to exist and it's always going to exist, whereas Ukraine could stop existing at any moment.
I love that. I think that, I mean, so I have a lot of friends that are biracial, and I love that you are prideful of both. I feel like most times people erase one entirely and take on to the other one. And I'm like, I go, you know what? You can be both. You can always be both, and you can be very prideful of both cultures. And it breaks my heart. I mean, because I, again, being Haitian, I'm very prideful of who I am and what I do and what comes out of my mouth. So when I say things, I'm like, I go, oh no, I know what came out of my mouth. I know what I'm saying. because I thought about it well before I opened my mouth. I'm not just verbalizing it, but I'm very bothered by when someone is like biracial and they choose not to sit there and acknowledge both. And I'm like, yeah. I go, it's okay. I mean, like, you are who you are. I go, it's this is the thing where when you bring two beautiful worlds together, find ways that you could then show people like, this is, I am the essence of two amazing cultures. And I'm learning both of them. And I may not like something on this one, although I am like, what, you don't like rice and beans? What?
No, I love them, but.
No, but I understand the whole entire concept of having them too much. Yeah. But I love that you are taking pride of both your cultures. I love that you're advocating for Ukraine before everyone else, because, you know, people jump on the bandwagon when something's going on. I love that you were ahead of the game, and now it's even more important because you were ahead of the game. You got a whole entire group of individuals excited about who they are. I'm so proud of you. I'm super proud of you. I mean, your article in the CNN, right? It was CNN. Yeah. I read that. I was like, bravo. Like who is this kid? What? Oh my God. And literally I read it because I'm always going to advocate everything that your dad does. And so I was like liking it, but then I read it and then I saw your name, but I didn't see your last name. So I wasn't paying attention. And I'm like, I go, Igor, can you connect me to this like girl? And he's like, he goes, my daughter. I'm like, what? What do you mean? And so that's when I clicked on the last name. I swear to God, I didn't even look at your last name at all, because I just thought you were a reporter. And I'm like, yeah. Oh my God, this is good. I go, this is fantastic. So yeah, I'm oblivious to certain things, but I'm happy that he posted this, and I went right to him, and I'm happy that he made this introduction, which wasn't that hard, because it was just like Jody, Katarina, Katarina, Jody, boom. And I definitely do want to speak to you every 2 weeks, because now I'm that, yeah. I'm going to be that worried auntie where I'm like, where is she? So every 2 weeks, I would love to check on you to just see like that you're okay and what's going on. Yeah. And just to have a person that you could see, I always say take pictures, take videos, because you're documenting history. You're conserving history, but you are also documenting history as well. So just be aware of not just what's going on, but how you're seeing it and how you're taking it all in, because that will be extremely helpful for all of us that are on this end, but also for every young Ukrainian that's anywhere around the world that wants to do something, but they can't. You are their voice right now.
Okay. Thank you.
So my last question before we go, this is the way I end with everyone, no matter how many times. So you're going to be answering this a lot, so you can just start thinking of different ideas. But yeah. If you had a personal ask and a professional ask of anyone that's listening to you right now, what would be your personal ask and what would be your professional ask?
My first personal ask is I want whoever's listening to this to look up the artist Kazimir Malevich. He was the artist that painted the Black Square. He is one of the most famous avant-garde artists in history, and he's Ukrainian, but he's known as Russian. And in fact, in most museums around the world, he's labeled as a Russian artist, but he is very much Ukrainian. And I want people to hear his story. And he's one of my favorite artists. And I think it's such a shame that he's been erased from Ukrainians' histories. And so I want people to look him up, look at his art and read his story and learn that he's a Ukrainian artist. So that's a personal ask.
One more time, his name and how do you spell it?
Kazimir Malevich. So that's Kazimir space Malevich. Malevich. Yeah. So that's, I really want to spread more awareness of him and his story and his art, because it's beautiful. So that's a personal ask. And then a professional ask is, of course, Shadows Project is working with museums all around Ukraine that are trying to get more equipment to protect their art. And so essentially, if anyone's listening and they either themselves or know someone who can help us get access to protective equipment, such as fireproof cabinets, bubble wrap, cardboard, fireproof blankets, literally anything. I mean, people have donated wraps of bubble wrap and it's been extremely helpful. So any kind of protective equipment of that sort, that would be amazing. And so we're trying to look for any donors that can provide that kind of equipment for us. So let me know if anyone knows a way for us to get access to those kind of things. Especially museums around the world that already have access to this equipment. We've talked to a few Western museums that have donated things. So it's been really helpful. So anyone that can help with those cultural preservation efforts, that would be amazing.
And I have to say that's something that people don't think about. People are watching the news, and obviously number one priority is people. Number one priority is making sure that the humans are absolutely 100% fine. They're getting to their locations. They're being able to be fed. And so I love all these organizations that are helping in that matter and making sure that the children are taken care of, the elderly are taken care of. But boy, oh boy, people are not talking about preserving the history. And I love that you are doing this. I love that you are even just bringing this to the forefront for me. Because again, it's one of those moments, it's an afterthought. And I'm like, I go, of course, it makes sense. Because if you annihilate the country and you're annihilating the museums, that means the history of everything that came before you is going to be gone and no one will ever know. So thank you so very much for that. And in 2 weeks' time, I'm going to like literally putting it on the calendar. I'm putting it on your calendar. 2 weeks' time, I definitely want to come back to you and I want to find out how it's been going, but how it was for you, because this is going to be your first time going into Ukraine at this point, right? I want to hear that. And I mean, and maybe I even check into you, with you for a week, but I'll just check in with you to see how you're feeling, and then we'll just like hop on, even if it's for 15 minutes, so that way this is going to be this ongoing conversation.
Okay, sounds good.
Beautiful. Thank you, my friend. You are awesome. Last thing, what's your degree in?
International security.
Nice. Oh, so perfect. So perfect. I'm international marketing. So yes, we want to sit there. If we learn a skill set, my dad always said, you learn a skill set, you can't just keep it for one place. You have to sit there and share it with the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bravo. Have a wonderful day. Please stay safe. Take care of yourself. Go for a walk. Talk to as many people as you want. You want to sit there and just talk to me, just sit there like WhatsApp me like, Jody, just need someone to talk to. So let's just get more people talking to you so that way you are in a happy place at any given time during this extremely hard time.
Amazing. Okay. Thank you so much.
All right.
I'll talk to you in 2 weeks then.
Okay. Bye, my friend.
Bye.